It is very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you on this bank holiday Monday. Yes, I work on bank holidays, unlike many people in this country who don't. Now, I appreciate most of you should have a day off. It is a bank holiday. But we do have to apologise today because our website is down. And it's down because hosting companies decide they don't work on bank holidays. Well, not till 12 o'clock, so I've been told. They don't answer the phone till 12 o'clock because they want the staff to have a lie-in. Isn't that nice? They only open Monday to Friday anyway, 9 to 5, just like your doctor. You know the way you can't get sick after 5 o'clock in the evening? Well, the same it seems with a website. It mustn't go down any time after 5 o'clock because then you have a serious problem with your hosting company. Now, I don't think this happens around the world. I think it's primarily in Ireland. And we called 5 co-hosting companies today and they all said the same thing. They don't open on a bank holiday Monday and they only operate Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. What a country we live in. What a wonderful weekend it's been. No, it hasn't. And I'm here on a bank holiday Monday and I feel like going back to bed at this stage, to be honest with you, because so many things are going wrong. So I do apologise. If you are going to the website, unfortunately, it's out of action at the moment. We will have it up by the close of business today, I hope, because we obviously have a backup and we can sort it all out. But it has had problems over the weekend. So I apologise to all our members who've been going on looking to try and watch videos. Unfortunately, you can't at this very moment of time. If you want to listen to our podcast, by the way, don't forget they are available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, all the usual places. So you don't have to go to the website. But you can listen live right now on the website, surprisingly enough, which is quite bizarre. I don't even understand that because I'm not that technically minded. But there you go. It'll be all sorted out by the end of the day. What a weekend it's been. Happy Easter, by the way. I know it was yesterday. Although you'd be wondering, was it really Easter after all? Or was it Trans Day of Visibility? I mean, look, I understand the trans people already had the day or something like that. I don't know the date, and Easter is a moving feast, as they call it. But hey, what was the point in having the two of them on the same day? Could they not have picked another day? I mean, Jesus could only get up on the cross on one particular day. You know what I mean? Of the year, Good Friday into Easter. That's the way it works, isn't it? You know what I mean? Could the trans people, I mean, there's 364 other days of the year that could have been a trans day of visibility. And by the way, they're very visible. I know where you are. You're all over TikTok. You're all over the internet. You're everywhere. So, I mean, I don't need to see you. You know, it's not that important really to me, to be honest with you. I'm not trans. I'm quite happy being a man, by the way. I was born a man. I'm quite happy being a man. I don't want to be a woman. I don't think I'd be a good woman, to be honest with you. What would I be? The Nora Boylan Show. Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to the Nora Boylan Show. No, it wouldn't suit me at all, to be honest with you, to be a woman. Anyway, rant over for now. And a political chaos, of course. Government in a complete and utter mess. Yesterday was officially, I believe, the last day, by the way, for the Taoiseach to be the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. And by the way, where was the happy Easter from the President or Leo Varadkar yesterday afternoon on Twitter or Facebook? I didn't see any statement saying happy Easter to anybody. What's going on? Have we forgotten? Have we lost our way or something in society? By the way, I'm not religious. You know what I mean? I don't have to respect their religion. I respect religious people, by the way. But I don't have to respect their religion to celebrate Easter. I wolfed a load of Easter eggs yesterday because it is Easter. But mind you, I believe they're calling them celebration eggs now because they don't want to upset people who might be Muslim or Hindu or Buddha or whatever it happens to be. What a load of bullshit. It's Easter. Get over it. Happy Easter, everybody. Why didn't our government say happy Easter? I see Thomas Pringle, by the way, the TD, brought himself on Twitter yesterday to say happy Trans Visibility Day. But he couldn't say happy Easter. Happy Easter, Thomas. Happy Easter to all the politicians, by the way, who were celebrating Trans Visibility Day yesterday. I was celebrating Easter, not Trans Visibility Day, can I just point out. Now, the Scottish Government have confirmed that since September 2023 that the rent cap or moratorium will end today. It is April Fool's Day, by the way. It's past 12 o'clock, so let's be done with it, okay? But there's no fooling going on. It is past 12 o'clock. And the rent cap ends today. It's a period where landlords can't increase the rent, of course, as you well know. Now, Jeremy Vine has been talking about it on TV and suggested the government should extend the rent cap for a further 5 years. Now, just in Irish legislation, it dictates residential rents cannot rise more than 2% in line with inflation across areas known as rent pressure zones. So we don't really have a rent cap as such. We have rent pressure zones where you can't raise it any more than the rate of inflation or 2%, whichever is higher. And I read an interesting take on this on Reddit. And it says, supply issues are a real problem, but rental caps do mean that people never vacate cheap units. And the units that are available tend to have a higher than average price. New stock is also priced ridiculously high because developers and investors know that they're setting the floor for the unit forever because they don't charge the highest rents. They can then lose that level of rent forever since they can only increase by 2% annually. In other words, what he's saying is, that if you have a new unit, you're going to set the rent purposely high because you know you can't increase it more than 2% a year if you're in a rent pressure zone. So it kind of inflates the price of new units. And I can see why that could happen. And it said, before we had rent pressure zones and caps on increases, many landlords just left the rents the same and were happy with it if they were happy with the tenants. They knew if the tenants moved on, they could then let it out at the market rates again. In other words, if you had a property and two people were renting for 1,200 quid and you really liked them, you'd leave it at 1,200 quid. If they left, you went, I'll put up to 1,600 now because that's what the market dictates. In other words, you wouldn't chuck them out. You keep it at 1,200 quid because you knew you could put it up if you ever let it out again, but you can't do that anymore. So now landlords are constantly told that they have to increase the rents for two reasons. If you don't increase every year, you'll be never able to get it back up to the market rate again. In other words, landlords now feel pressured to increase by 2% a year. They kind of have to, because otherwise they can't keep up, because they can't go 4% the following year. And according to the latest figures for January 2024, homelessness is at a record high in Ireland. There's a surprise. In the last week of that month, there were 13,531 people in emergency accommodation across the country, which includes just over 4,000 children. And the Labour councillor, Conor Sheehan, has called for urgent action on housing and for the government to support his party's private member's motion bill on housing in the Dáil. They were going to build a million houses at one stage, the Labour Party. Who's the Labour Party? Who are they? They were a political party from years ago, weren't they? Are they still around? Anyway, according to the North City representative, the government's insufficient response has led to record homelessness, soaring rents and inadequate housing supply. And the Labour Party said they have outlined a series of strong proposals. It's all good, well and good bringing out proposals to transform the housing market in Ireland, which include a 3-year rent freeze and an end to no-fault evictions and greater restrictions around evictions. So here's the thing. Do you agree with rent freezes and do you agree with eviction bans? Now, as you know, we've had both during COVID in particular, we had both. But do you agree with rent increases or rent caps? And do you agree with eviction bans or do you agree with evictions? Let me know what you think. There's an argument for both sides of that coin. The number, as usual, is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Now, let me go to my good friend, Peter Dooley from the Dublin Renters Union, who joins me. Peter, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and happy Easter to yourself and all your listeners. We'll never forget Easter.
Yeah, we won't, unless you're trans, of course. Happy Easter, Peter.
Thanks very much, Noah. So, thanks, Peter, yourself and listeners.
There's a lot of things we agree on, but there's one or two things we disagree on. This is probably one of them. The idea that, you know, the Labour Party are now looking for a rent cap and also to look for, an eviction ban, so to speak, over the next 3 years. Do you think that's a good idea?
The Labour Party, are they?
Yeah, they still exist as far as I know, by name.
That was the famous Eamon Gilmore that said Labour's way or Frankfurt's way, wasn't it? Like, we all know where that ended up.
Yeah. They're like the dojo.
We all know where that ended up, like, you know.
They've almost become extinct at this stage. Joan Burton
Labour Party, are essentially an irrelevance, I would say, in terms of what people's issues are, and proposals mean absolutely nothing without concrete action. Like, I think the bigger issue is not around, I've been calling for a long number of years, in terms of having long-term security for tenants and the issues around rents. We know rents have doubled in the last 10 years. We've seen record amounts of evictions. We've seen record house prices. The housing market essentially has gone completely out of control. And that brings me to my next point, because what's important to note in this is the whole idea of the market relating to housing, which I have a fundamental major disagreement with, it because everything's been pushed into the market. Like homes, through the Labour government, through the Fine Gael government in 2009, that opened up the door to vulture funds coming in, has brought so many people into the private rental market. Part of the condition of that bailout was to stop building public and council housing, which was, when Ireland was flat broke, we built great council housing estates through the 30s, 40s and 50s, all around Dublin, all around Ireland. And now we're in a situation where we're in a complete crisis with the housing, dysfunctional housing market, because of so many people struggling to afford and secure a home. And then we have issues with, as I said, sky high rents, and record amount of evictions, record amount of homelessness.
But historically, we can see what happened. Okay, Sean Lamass, of course, was the man who wanted housing for everybody. And of course, Dublin Corporation and all the corporations and councils around the country start building houses like they were going out of fashion back in the 60s and 70s. We then, you know, got into a more affluent society where people were making more money. And we brought us up, say, to the Celtic Tiger back in the start of 2000, where people had their own money to buy a house. So we didn't really need as much social housing. Boom came the collapse, of course, in 2009. And then all of a sudden we have people losing their jobs on less income than they had before, couldn't afford a house. The prices started to go up 2013, 2014, beyond people's income. And then all of a sudden we needed housing again. But it was too late. We had stopped building it.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Sorry, that's history in 2 minutes for dummies. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But I think a big issue has been since the foundation of the state as well. Two out of three every council housing built through our public money has been sold off, which has been a big issue. The tenant purchase game.
They couldn't afford to keep them, Peter. Dublin Corporation sold my father his council house for £1,600 in the mid-1980s, right? Which was the value it was at in 1963 when he first rented it. But the reason they sold them off to everybody is because they couldn't afford to maintain them. There was too many.
Well, what they've done is actually they sold them off at huge discounts, and they actually use the money now continuing this mad policy by selling them off and actually using it to maintain existing stock. And we see the deplorable state of a lot of councils.
Look at the money they're owed. They're owed millions.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
because people are not paying their bloody rent. That's the problem.
Well, there are issues, and people should be paying their rent. But there are issues, underlying issues, regarding the substandard conditions a lot of people are living in a lot of council flats in around Dublin City in particular, like with rat infestation and all the other issues as well.
But that's not everybody. There are people choosing not to pay
everybody.
Their rent.
No, I understand. Yeah. And I agree. Except people have to pay a fair rent to proportionate your income, and that's what they have in differential rents with local authorities, and they should pay it, obviously, you know. But I mean, in terms of the conditions as well, there should be a fair package in terms of it, you know. They should live in proper conditions as well, like in terms of habitable conditions and so forth as well. But just to go back to the point about the last 14-15 years in terms of this, like in terms of the homeless figures, when Enda Kenny was in power back in 2011, I think there was 640 people, our children were in homeless accommodation. And now it's 4,170. And this is a day today, you know, where we remember the proclamation of the Republic was read in the steps of the GPO, and he spoke that you would cherish all the children of the nation equally. It seems to me that they don't. They consider the landlord class.
I'm not going to get into it too deeply, right? But in relation to those people who are homeless, okay, they do have parents who have a level of responsibility as well, okay? And, you know, so it's not entirely up to the government to look after your kids. It's up to you and the government together, you know, in tandem to make sure that everybody's treated equally within the state. So it's up to both, okay? We all get the same things. We all get children's allowance. We all get the dole, for example, if we lose our jobs. We all get, you know, whatever it is, subsidies or whatever subsidies are available. So it's up to us too to make the best of that. By the way, just to mention as well, there's 37 million owed in rent from council housing just in Dublin alone. 37 million. I mean, that's a lot of money, right? And here's the problem. We still have to maintain those houses even though they don't pay. But just park that for the moment and let's get back to private housing, right? And you talked about vulture funds, and you're right. But the problem is, if the vulture funds are building apartments or housing or buying up housing stock and they're going to rent it out, they're going to rent it out above market value because they know they can't increase the rent more than 2% per year. So isn't that a problem with freezing rent?
Some of the facts are, as I've said, there's a myriad of solutions to this, and the political classes in Ireland aren't willing to address them. As I said, council housing, stopping the sell-off of council housing is one of them. A bigger issue is offering security of tenure for people in terms of long-term protections that you have in a lot of European countries. Another issue would be about building public housing, which they're not, because currently we have record amounts of people on housing waiting lists. Like at the moment, the housing agency had a report last week that said there's over 58,000 people or households, sorry, are on local authority housing lists. And that, when you consider in total with the people on housing
lists. That seems like a small amount. Is that just Dublin or is that across
households?
The whole country?
That would be households.
Oh, households. So,
you
sorry,
know, if you can nearly double that, 134,000, if you consider the people that are on, you know, housing assistance payments and RAD schemes and all these other schemes as well. Again, where public money has been given into private hands to landlords to inflate the rents. And as well as that, the new landlords that are coming on board, new tenancies and vulture funds, are that comprised of a 30%.
But Peter, you keep going on about the vulture funds. Yeah, but vulture funds make up a very small amount of the housing market. I mean, people go on about the vulture funds, and by the way, they should be paying more tax and all that kind of stuff. I agree with all of that, but they make up a very small amount of the housing market.
Yeah, but there should be fair tax. Like landlords, in terms of what landlords have had, there should be a fair tax across the spectrum for landlords. Like,
the majority of housing in this country now is private landlords. It's just incidental landlords. Somebody who got a house from their father when he died or whatever it is, or bought a second house during the Celtic Tiger or whatever it happens to be. They're the majority of landlords in this country. They're not men and women in black capes and cloaks, you know, running around trying to screw everybody.
It's about 3% of the population. Would be people who are landlords in the country. Mm-hmm. People have more than one property. So if you consider, that's a very small amount. And if you consider it's 97% of people that don't, whether they own their homes or rent or homeless or couch surfing or struggling to get a house to live in, like, who dictates the policy? Like, the policy should be dictated for the majority, shouldn't it? I think in terms of seeing a home as a social valuable good, which is actually is very beneficial for society and very beneficial for your economy as well.
Okay, but getting back to the rent freeze. Now, in Scotland, the rent freeze ends today, although they're pushing for it to be extended, well, according to one person, for 5 years. 5 years seems like an awful lot. Anyway, do you agree with freezes? Because we agree that there's benefits to it, but we also agree there's negatives to it as well, because it creates a false market. So it creates a market whereby, you know, vulture funds, as you mentioned earlier on, or developers will purposely set the rate higher than it actually is because they know they can't increase it anymore for another 3 years or whatever the rent freeze is. And not only that, then you've got a situation if you have, say, eviction bans, where people are sitting in cheap accommodation and don't move out of it, and it doesn't free up accommodation. So there's pros and there's cons to both.
Yeah, but I think what's more important is, like, you can't take one, you know, headline issue like a rent freeze in isolation with all the other issues. As I said, when the eviction ban, we were campaigning for the eviction ban the last couple of years, and, you know, when that was removed, it was a record amount of evictions. There was over like 5,800 eviction notices were issued just subsequent to that. So basically, it's just like a stopgap measure.
But that's what we said. Everybody said that. But I said that to you going back when they brought in the eviction ban at the time. I think we chatted on the radio. And I said, there's no point, because I said, in 6 months' time when the eviction ban is finished, or a year's time when the eviction ban is finished, we've had two of them now, two eviction bans. All that'll happen is you've got a glut of evictions at the end of it. Yeah, and a load of unhappy landlords who haven't got paid their rent.
Yeah, but I made it public at the time, and I spoke openly about it. Like, you need loads of other measures on top of that. Like, it's not one panacea. Like, you know what I mean?
But you can't keep the eviction ban going on forever. You know what I mean? So,
but I think you have the idea behind it was, you know, I would have argued for it was basically to get your legislation in place to provide long term security, get your funding in place in terms of your housing. They're missing housing targets to beat the ban. This political establishment, and, you know, put them all in the one boat as far as I'm concerned. They're grandstanding, they're talking absolute nonsense about a lot of stuff, and not to mention the government who are overseeing this absolute humanitarian disaster. And then we have the other crises on top of it, Niall, creating chaos as well with immigration as well on top of it. So we've all these other issues going on, and you can't take these all in isolation. You have to take them into a bigger rounded picture to what society we want to create and what country we want to live in Ireland. Like, I think that's the genesis of where I always come from in terms of where we live and how we live and what society and what Ireland we should be proud of. Like, you know,
I just want to mention the central bank figures show the 47,000 Irish homes are now currently owned by vulture funds. Meanwhile, Ulster Bank is reported to be offloading 875 million of distressed buy-to-let and home mortgages, as AIB is said to be gearing up to sell part of its 1.9 billion portfolio of buy-to-let mortgages in serious arrears. So the amount of people in serious arrears in this country is ridiculous. Now, to be fair to Ireland, unlike any other country in the world, you cannot pay your mortgage in this country for 2 or 3 years and still be living in your house. You do that in any other country in the world, past 2 months and you're out the door. So ever since Judge Elizabeth Dunn said that ruling.
Well, the bankers quit in Ireland,
Well, it was because of the bankers. In fairness, if you take out a mortgage, you know, you've signed a mortgage to pay it back, right? That's whether you like it or not, whether you think it's unfair or not, whether you think they charge ridiculous interest, which they do, that's it. You signed it, right? Now, Judge Elizabeth Dunn, of course, after the banking collapse, you know, signed this declaration that you can't be chucked out within 2 years. And even then, when the bank takes you to court, the courts must give you 6 months then to get your papers and stuff and shit in order. So that's another 6 months. But the time you get a court date, it's going to be another 6 months. So realistically, it's 3 or 4 years before a bank will even get you into a courtroom. And even then, they'll probably fail miserably. So it's quite tough to get people out out of a house nowadays. It really is.
But think about the genesis of this, Niall. Like, we're the ones that bailed out the bankers back in 2009, as we started the conversation a few minutes ago. We're the ones that bailed out these bankers and were, you know, Labour with their great mantras at the time, and went into government with Fine Gael and opened up the agenda to bring in the European Central Bank, the IMF, and let them destroy our country with austerity. And now we're at the same boat now, where we're giving back huge bankers' bonuses. They're making huge profits. They're charging extortionate interest rates. They're putting people, for instance, who could have buy-to-let mortgages under pressure as well, and all these other issues as well. So these are the real people we should be, you know, looking at and challenging, where the power lies in Ireland.
Okay. Well, stay there, Peter. Let me just go to John. I know you want to stay with us. We're talking to Peter Dooley from the Dublin Renters Union, who, by the way, is running for local election, aren't you? Or are you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, thanks. Kimmy dropped mine's area, so I'm proud there. I've actually a few campaigns going as well. I can talk to you about as well if you want.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll come to that before you go off today. Okay, John, hi. How are you doing, John?
Happy Easter and all that.
Happy Easter, John. Happy Easter. And happy trans Visibility Day. Yeah, so they tell me.
And can I say a miserable Easter to the Labour Party? What's left of them? And here's my forecast. Like, I mean, next election, Greens, Labour, gone. Finito.
Well, I tell you what, if people don't put Labour and the Green Party out of existence, there's something actually wrong with them.
Well, I would say put them out of their misery, because they must be in misery at the moment. Like, I mean, God help us. I actually feel sorry for them.
Do you? I have no sympathy for them whatsoever. No. None whatsoever.
They're
the masters of their own making.
When I said no, I feel sorry for them. I had my tongue planted firmly in my cheek.
So look at that Ivana Bacic one there after the referendum. She was the first one out of the traps to say, well, we didn't think it was a good idea. Yeah, but you told everyone to vote yes, Ivana, you tick. So
she will definitely lose her seat, and I will rejoice.
Yeah, I think you know what? I think it's going to be a huge election when it happens. Now here's the problem before the election, right? You've still got most likely another 8 months to go before there's an election. And Ireland tends to suffer with this thing called national amnesia. And by the time that comes around, the government will do a few nice things, and they'll have a nice budget in November where they'll give away a few quid and they'll give a few energy credits away to people with no money, and they'll garner up a little bit of support again. But I can see the favourites not getting voted. You're right. The Leos of this world, although he wants to be a backbencher, I can't see him getting voted in. Micheál Martin, he's been probably the worst Taoiseach we've had, or the second worst Taoiseach we've had, certainly, and the worst tarnisher we've had, or the worst leader of Fianna Fáil, surprisingly, because he took him long enough to get there. And I can see all the major players, not Rodrigo Gorman, Helen McEntee, Simon Harris, I can see them all not getting voted in.
Well, it will be a totally different landscape, because you have Michael Collins, you have Ian Toole, you have a lot of independents. Yeah. I mean, so
vote for independent Ireland. Yeah, Ian Toole, yeah, nice party as well. Yeah.
So I mean, if you say now, if the amnesia comes in this time, it's all over. Like, for Christ's sake, they came out now to pit the electorate, and they won the day on the two nonsensical referendums. So stay in that mode now, and we'll bury these bastards.
Okay, now John, getting back to the question at hand.
Yeah, well, look, I'm uncomfortable at the idea of, you know, the government getting control of private property, like, and telling me, like, if I decide to go abroad and if I decide to rent out my house now, surely I should be entitled to charge what I like for my house. And if somebody wants to pay that rent grant, that should be okay. Now,
in an ideal situation, that's a free market and you should be able to do that. We don't live in a socialist country. So, yes, you should be able to, but that's... We're not being realistic. We're living in Ireland and there's a housing crisis.
In saying that, what's happening at the moment with the exorbitant rents, lately there was a case here on Cork where there's a quotation, there was one room came up for rent, and the price of that one room a month was €1,500 for one room.
And that's in Cork, yeah.
That's in Cork. No, that's an absolute...
And Cork was always about half the price of Dublin. Oh, well, certainly two-thirds of the price of Dublin,
it's around the same.
Yeah,
it's about the same now, like. But the thing is, though, that price now is actually immoral. The prices that they're asking for people, where you got two people earning good salaries now, right? We'll take the old nurse and the guard, where there's two professional people. and one wage has gone completely out of paying the rent, and then you're trying to survive and maybe start a family on the other one, which is nearly impossible, right? And the trouble is that Mr. Greed is here now, and I think Mr. Greed is here to stay. And I think, well, like any other city in the world, now New York, London, whatever, where property will be out of the reach of a lot of people forever, and people will be...
Well, then there's only one way to address that, then, isn't there? You increase people's salaries. But then the problem is, when you increase people's salaries, you increase the cost of living. When you increase, it's just a vicious circle. Then the employers have to pay, then unemployment goes up. So all these things have a knock-on effect. And I agree, by the way, people should be earning more money.
You see, the problem is, you know, like there's an elephant in the room going to be coming down the tracks in years to come. That's the people now, like, you know, they're in their 40s, right, that are paying this type of rent. That's when they'll come to retirement age, like, how are they going to pay the rent? You're going to be a glut of people at retirement age actually homeless.
Well, here's the rule of economics. The rule of economics, and Peter will tell me if I'm wrong on this because he loves his economics. The rule of economics is you should never be paying more than 30% of your salary on your place to live. That's the rule of economics, right? If that was the case in Ireland, we'd all need to be earning 6,600 minimum per month. Now, that's not the case. Most people are not earning anywhere close to 6,600 per month because the average rent, say, in Dublin, for example, is 2,200. So there's no way people are earning that much money. So, sorry, Peter.
Yeah, but listen, Niall, if you look at the minimum wage, it's just been really recently increased to €12.70. And OIBEC now are lobbying the government pretty hard at the moment, actually, not to increase the minimum wage up to like €15, which is so-called minimum living wage, right? And now, what's the excuse for that? They only have a lot of cheap labour coming in. So basically, you can keep wages refreshed.
I can understand why IBEC would say that, because obviously they're...
People against each other.
Well, no. Yeah. See, they're members. If you've got a small corner shop and, say, five people working in it, and you're paying minimum wage...
This is a misnomer with all this. These are the lobbyists that work for the big business people. They don't work for the small people. They work for the big guys.
Hang on, Peter.
They work for big guys.
From a moral point of view, nobody should be working for even 15 quid an hour at this stage, right? Because that just doesn't get you anything in this society anymore. And I completely agree. But I have to think of the economics of it. And the economics are, if you've got even a large business, say a big retail store or whatever, and you're paying people, say, 15 or 16 quid an hour, well, then you're going to have to let people go because you have a certain amount of money that you set aside, you know, for staff. I mean, you have a profit margin. These big corporate companies have profit margins. And the profit margin is going to stay the same. They're not going to suffer because of it.
But so many occupations, like, you know, you look at even now across every, like, even low pay in particular, but even across the spectrum, you look at even now recently with the, you know, teachers, nurses, guards as well, they can't afford accommodation. So it's hitting...
Well, that's because of wages. Well, that's because, like everybody else, the wages haven't gone up substantially in the last 20 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, they've gone up a little bit, but that's substantially. I'm earning less now than I was earning 20 years ago.
But
I don't work for RTE, you know.
I'm losing more money every day.
I don't work for RTE.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You're not on a big salary like all these big guys like an RTE and spouting out the propaganda.
I was never on the half a million that Joe Duffy was on at one stage in his life, or whatever, 400 and something thousand. I don't know what he's on now, 300 and something thousand.
They're all part of the
1%. 351, thanks, John. Okay, getting back. John, do you believe there should be an eviction ban?
I'm uncomfortable with evictions because of our history, right? But in saying that, again, if I use myself as an example, if I go in holidays and I rent out my property and all of a sudden the clowns that have moved in here decide, well, not paying the rent anymore, he can go fake himself, right? I'll never get that rent back. I'll have to go to court, which will cost me money, right? So you cannot have a situation where there is no evictions there.
Yeah, I know, where people are strategically not paying. And I know somebody who strategically doesn't pay his rent. There's nothing the landlord can do about it.
Where a person, like, I mean, does run into difficulty where one loses the job or whatever, right? Yeah. And maybe the main breadwinner in the house. If there can be an accommodation done at the banks and you can extend it out and do something. Well, I'm uncomfortable throwing people out at the fallen in hard times, but where if you come along and you just say, to hell to this, we're not paying rent anymore, we have a free gaff here, you should be kicked out in your home.
Well, absolutely. I think every individual case has to be looked at. If somebody has the money, it's like, for example, if you don't pay maintenance in the court, they bring you before the judge in court. If you don't have the money, the judge is not going to put you in jail. They'll come to some arrangement. But if the judge looks at your bank statement and you've 40 grand at the bank and you're not paying maintenance of 30 quid a week for a child, they'll put you in jail. if you have it, you should pay it. In other words, a judge or anybody, there should be, you know, the PRTB or whoever should be able to look at your bank statement and say, will you have the money? You should be paying it. Let me stay there. Peter, stay there. John, stay there. Joe, hi, how are you?
Good afternoon, Niall. Happy Easter to you, Niall.
Yeah.
Happy Easter. How are you keeping? You're good?
All good. Yes, I enjoyed my twirl and buttons Easter egg yesterday. Yeah, thanks to my good wife.
Yeah. And I just couldn't believe what you said a while ago when you said about this trans thing. Jesus, it must be
Trans Visibility Day. Easter.
Oh my God.
There was people online seem to forget it was Easter altogether, including some of our politicians.
Yeah.
We've lost our way.
And today, of course, is April Fool's Day, you know. Of course, there's enough of fools up in the Dáil anyway, so we'll see next week now how many clowns come out of the woodwork.
Careful, little Joe, that's homophobic.
Exactly. And a happy Easter to you as well, John, and many, and all the listeners on this show.
Yeah, go ahead. Joe, do you believe we should have a rent freeze and an eviction ban?
Well, I think there should be a rent freeze for certain individuals. I think that there is a major problem in this country now with rents, and you see that there by the homeless figures last Thursday, which was astonishing again. It seems to be getting worse by the day. You had the Minister for Housing on last Thursday night on RT, who didn't really want to answer questions. And it just goes
They're not,
to show
they're not
you,
good at answering questions.
No. And for once, and I'm not a defender of RTE, but I will say that your man, Fran McNulty, did ask some hard questions at him, and he didn't seem to be really getting any good replies. Your man was just fobbing off about what the good things they were doing and this and that. Like, you know, I find it
mind-blowing the way politicians can answer those questions. They get asked a hard question. So, Mr. McNulty, do you think that we should have rent freezes in this country? Well, I don't know, but I do like the colour of my underwear. What do you think yourself? And it's just mind-blowing the way they can completely go off the question altogether and not answer it. They just don't answer questions.
There seems to be a problem with this government anyway, and a lot of the, and not just them, but Sinn Féin then were even as bad, putting out posters outside the Dáil last Thursday, which was more virtual signalling, thinking that people were after forgetting what damage they've done over the last couple of years, like, you know. I do think there should be a rent. I think there should be a rent freeze, but I think there should be to a certain extent. I think like that, if people are in long term who are having problems trying to get accommodation, I think there should be some sort of policy there for them to help them. Because at the moment, we seem to be doing everything elsewhere. We see, instead of looking after our own, we are giving houses to feckin' every Tom, Dick and Harry from all over the world, which is astonishing because you have migrants coming into the country and they can get a house in a matter of days.
Yeah.
And there's Irish people sleeping on the streets for fucking years. Yeah. It's disgraceful. It is absolutely disgraceful.
Well, now, to be fair, they don't tend to get a house, but they will get accommodation, yes.
Well, they'll get accommodation. I saw it on YouTube there recently. Yeah, I saw a video on YouTube, and there were, I tell you, some of the houses that were staying in our accommodations, they were like palaces, like, you know?
Yeah.
And, you see, this is the problem, you see. This is why people are very angry in this, well, the majority of people are angry in this country. You see the way things are going. People are like, it's astonishing like that. This seems to be, we're supposed to be one of the richest countries in the world.
Yeah.
But yet we can't fix the housing and health problems. Well,
we're not really one of the richest countries in the world. We pretend to be because we've got a lot of foreign investments.
Exactly. You're right. But like, I think they should do it for certain cohorts or an emergency situation. But I also think too that there should be another plan. If you refuse to take a property, if you say are on a list and you refuse to take a property after a certain amount of time, then I think there should be a sort of a cap put on it.
Yeah, well, they do. You can only refuse one property, or two. You have to take the third one, I think, if you're on the council list. I do know
of people, I've heard of a case here a couple of years ago where a woman and her family, she refused to take the house because she wanted a swimming pool in her backyard. Now, who does she fucking think she was? Living in fucking South Fork or something, is it? Or one of these big American mansions?
Are you sure, it was a swimming pool? I heard it was a trampoline, but whatever.
There was
another one as well. Refused to take a house because she couldn't fit her American fridge in the kitchen.
That's right, yeah. And that to me...
Well, actually, no, the funniest one was they contacted the family and they contacted them in June to say they had a house available for them because they'd been on the housing list for 7 years. And the family says, no, you can give it to somebody else. We're away for 4 months in Spain. So, We'll wait, we come back. Okay, but they are anecdotal stories, in fairness. But we do have a huge problem with people refusing housing sometimes, by the way.
Yeah. But I do, as I said before, and I'll say it again, if people are genuine and there's a genuine situation, I think there should be a rent freeze because rents are very high now in this country, and you see it there with properties and even with shops. Many shops are closing as a result of the astonishing rates. Yep. But the biggest laugh of all now, Niall, I've heard a new thing now. They're saying they're blaming climate change now for a lot of this. Do you ever hear the like of it?
No.
Climate change.
I don't know how climate change is responsible now for the price of rent, but maybe, I don't know, something to do with the increasing population, of course, of people coming into the country.
I heard that. Well, that's what they're saying the last couple of weeks.
You know, if your penis got smaller, they blame it on climate change. Do me a favour, lads. Please stay there. Peter, stay there. Since Eric has been waiting a while. I want to go to Eric as well. Eric, hi, how are you?
Not bad at all. I'm just having a great time listening to John and the other fella on there making me laugh. The swimming pool
in the garden, yeah. So you've been listening to Peter Dooley from the Renters Union there, and he thinks there's a lot of reasons why we should have rent caps and, in certain cases, eviction bans as well. Do you agree with him, Eric?
Begrudgingly, yes. There was a fella on before Peter that I thought he made a lot of good points bringing in about the vulture funds and whatnot.
Oh, that was Peter Dooley, yeah.
Oh, that was Peter. Sorry.
Yeah, you can vote for him. He's in Cambridge if you want to vote for him.
No, I will vote from the north, so I can't vote for you, Peter. But I would vote for you if I could. Begrudgingly, I'd agree with it because at this time that we're in with inflation, with the economy, with the immigration crisis, if you will, I don't think it makes sense to throw people out in the streets. I don't think it makes sense to raise prices in certain zones where they don't need to, you know. I understand the plight, and this is not going to be popular, but I also understand the plight of some of the landlords, because not everyone is part of a vulture fund. Some people took out mortgages, and this was a way for them to make money, and they're stuck with some tenants that they, for whatever reason, they can't get rid of, even if they're not paying their rent, they're not looking after the property.
I know, lots of cases like that.
Yeah, I do myself, and I feel for the landlords in that case as well. I'm lucky, I have a great landlord, sound, anything I need, he sorts me out. But I know not everyone is blessed with that. But also, there's also some unruly tenants as well. And that's the same in the council.
I know somebody who inherited a house from their mother, and they have a doctor renting it, a doctor, for the last 2 years, and hasn't paid his rent in 6 months, and they can't get him out.
So, my God.
You know what I mean? And they just can't get him out. Hasn't, and it's not like he doesn't have the money. Of course he has the money. He's a doctor, for God's sake. But cannot get him out. Because... for whatever reason, you have to go to the PRTB and you have to make an appeal and all this kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 6 months, no rent.
That's mental.
And eventually what will happen is...
he's earning money.
Yeah, eventually what will happen is he'll just piss off and he'll never pay the arrears. And in other words, they're just losing whatever it is, 1,700 or 2 grand a month. They're just losing that money.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, in that situation... I mean, I don't want to put a doctor out in the street, but there's a point where someone is taking the
taking the piss. Absolutely. Well, okay, but the problem, Eric, I agree with a lot of stuff Peter says, right? He's kind of, I've warmed to him over the years, right? But some of the stuff I kind of juggle with because, and I agree with some of the stuff that I've read in relation to when you have a rent freeze, it means that new developers or vulture funds who come on the market are purposely going to inflate prices because they know they can't put them up again, or they can only put them up with the rate of inflation. So they purposely put the price higher than the actual market dictates, which then in turn pushes the market price up. So the rent freeze can have the opposite effect.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. I mean, that's evident. I mentioned they live in the north side. On North Circular Road, they built those smart homes. You know, they have the computers and stuff like that built into the home and controls the heat and stuff like that. and a one bed started off at 2,400 2 years ago.
Wow.
And as you mentioned, that's more than likely due to because of the fact that the developers know that
they can only
I can't raise the rent here, so I'm going to get as much bang for my buck as I can. Well, until they release the rent pressure zone figures or loosen the rent freeze and evictions and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's look, there needs to be some type of solution developed between the private sector and the government.
Yeah.
Because we can utilize the power of the private sector if you're working with these developers. And I know not everyone's not in favor of that. I know not everyone is a fan of it. Everyone thinks the government should fucking do everything for you, but I'm not one of those people. I think, if anything, the government make things worse. You know, you can't expect the people who are making these conditions to fix them, to be honest, because if they had any brains, they wouldn't create the conditions that we're living in right now. So I think there needs to be some part private, some part public.
And but this is what I said to Peter already in relation to, say, Peter, and I know Peter's not making the private landlords out to be the evil people, but people do make them out to be the evil people. Peter, you know, if it wasn't for the private landlords, there'd be no houses at the moment. And the government basically is passing on the buck of their responsibility and the burden
of
renting to the private landlord by paying them half.
Of course, I fully accept that. And that's the whole premise of what I was talking about in terms of what's happened since 2009 and the financial crash and what the opportunity created for the private market to solve, so-called solve our housing crisis. But we know it doesn't solve our housing disaster. It makes it worse because when you leave it to an uncontrolled market, it's at the whim of how much money you can make rather than actually basing on the basic need of somebody having a home where they have security, stability, affordability. And that obviously has huge effects on people's mental health and physical health and drives more people into poverty and housing anxiety and stress as well. Like, and all these other issues like that has been created because of this. We need to go back to basics in Ireland and look after the people and instead of looking after the vested interests, as I spoke earlier with the bankers and all the rest of it, and even bowing down to the European Union all the time with their policies. Most of our legislation comes from the European Union as well. And it's just pushing this neoliberal privatisation agenda. And it's actually...
Yeah, but we have members of the Irish public who were elected representatives as EU MEPs, and they're useless.
No, well... What
do they actually do? Right? They're doing nothing over there. They're just putting their hand up every now and again and going, yeah.
But this is the reality of it, right? The reality of it, we have a lot of them are useless, to put them mildly, and they're on a big salary and you look after
them. And you never hear from them. Well. For 5 years, they get elected. Yeah. You don't hear from them until 6 months before they're due for election again. And all of a sudden, they're cutting ribbons in supermarkets. You know what I mean?
The really important point that needs to get out there to people. Yeah, the important point needs to get out to people is that 70% of our legislation comes from the European Union. It comes from the European Commission. And the European Commission is essentially unelected. And beyond that, it comes from lobbyists. Like, you know, Phil Hogan at the moment, who's now the key strategist now for Simon Harris, the new leader.
Nobody will ever forget Phil Hogan, the man responsible for the water charges, of course. Yeah.
Turn it down to a trickle. He was the man who said, turn it down to a trickle.
Yeah.
This is a guy who was actually behind Harris now at the moment, behind Kenny before him. He was a lobbyist as well. When he was opposed for the Golfgate scandal down in Connemara, when he was off golfing with his pals and he was driving back and he was stopped and stuff and he lost his commissionership because of this. He was working in the last couple of years as a key lobbyist, making over €1 million. And that's where the power comes from. It comes from the big corporations who pursue these policies that goes into the European Commission, goes through the machinations of the European Union before it comes into Ireland, where we transpose legislation. I don't know if you saw the other day, where we're getting fined. I think €2.5 or €3 million on not pushing through this directive quick enough. That's where the power lies. We need to take power back to people here in Ireland.
Okay, well, hang on a second. Let me just bring Bernie back in. Eric, state me if you want.
Still having a say.
Okay, sorry, Bernie, go ahead.
Hi, Niall. I hate the idea of rent freeze and all that. However, I think unfortunately there's so many people out there really struggling to try and get a house or some form of home for themselves for life. And they are, you know, paying all these rents, you know, so maybe just freeze them. All right, and make new rules for anyone who doesn't pay their rent or doesn't do anything. There is some part of a law enforcement place where they just are kicked out if people are not doing it and living, you know, properly. And I think the government should have this 5 years to make sure there's enough homes for every person in the country.
You're never going to do that in 5 years, Bernie. Not with the backlog that we have.
I know that now, but look, somebody has to take them on. Like they're what they're doing is wrong. It's wrong with professional and people living in temporary accommodation for the last 20 years, some people.
Yeah.
And it's not right. And they can't get on any ladder for anything. And there is no incentive to do anything for anybody. Just, you know, it's a money grabbing situation.
Mm.
And, you know, it's not right. Like, some people bought second homes when the good times were on for their pension, for future, for themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're now struggling, I suppose. You know, they're not making ends meet, and that there's a lot of issues with renters and rentees and all that. And I mean, the government are doing nothing, really. They're sending the page around the court every so often, and nobody's taking responsibility or onus on it and trying to fix the problem.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the text coming in here. There's a WhatsApp here as well, Peter, for you, I think. It says, Peter is a leftist ideologue with no real answers, just unrealistic ideas. And I understand the point he's making.
I'm having a conversation with him. I'm far from it. I'm putting the point of view across in terms of what society you want to create in Ireland. Like, as John mentioned earlier, like, we've a horrible record in Ireland of evictions. I can't overstate the fact that today is the 108th anniversary of when Patrick Pearse made the proclamation outside the steps of the GPO on Easter Monday 1916 in terms of what their idea was for Ireland. And that still has yet to be realised. And we don't want people, you know, we need to build a society that's dignified, based on respect. Look, I've no issue with people making money out of whatever they want to make money out of. But I think a foundation block of a society is having a home, having a dignified existence, a home, a health service, right to education, basic, you know, essentials. And then society and economy.
But you never have. Okay, let's be clear about it. There's no country in the world but a utopian society that's perfect.
It's not utopian.
No, you're talking about health. Look, there's always going to be problems, right? There's always going to be a waiting list. You're never going to have enough doctors or nurses. You're never going to have enough teachers. You're never going to have, you know.
No, a counter point that was made by your texter. He made a point about to say that this is, you know, an ideological position, which it's not. It's essentially, if you look at, I'll give you Finland, for example. You know, back in the 80s, they decided homeless. If you have a housing first, we'll have a housing first model.
Don't use Finland. Don't use Finland as an example. It's one of the most boring places in the world.
Well, yeah, but no, I mean, in terms of homelessness, my point is about homelessness. It's not about the
because there's not that many people living there for the size of the place.
Well, no, they have a huge amount of homelessness, Niall. And what they've done is, it was the centre-right government that decided they were going to end homelessness by providing the necessary supports for people. And the home as well, but all the necessary.
18,000 people are currently homeless in Finland. 18,000.
But there is a drive to do it. Like other countries, there was a drive to do it. So it's not necessarily. It's coming from a human standpoint. Like, what's the side? You know, even look at Gandhi. Like, what did Gandhi say about Western civilization? He says, "Well, it sounded like a good idea." Yeah. But was it really civilized? We live in a society where
I don't know whether we should be using Gandhi as some sort of measuring stick for the rest of the world.
Well, I'm just making the point of of civilization. Like, what civilized society do we live in? Like, it's not about an ideology. It's about civilized, being living in a civilized, humane way where people are respected and people have a decent existence. Like, I think everybody would agree on that.
Bernie, do you believe there should be ever an eviction ban? I mean, is there ever a reason for people to be evicted from a house?
Yes, of course. I mean, you have to respect the rules of living in a house. Everyone lives has a home, has to respect the rules of it.
Yeah.
You know, we all have. I mean, if you're going to trash somebody's house, not empty the rubbish, block up the loos, not clean the
place. Or not pay a rent.
And not pay a rent. Like, I mean, out the door you go.
Mm.
Wouldn't that be ideal? We'd be kicked out as a mortgage payer if you didn't pay your mortgage every month. The guys would be at your door.
Yeah.
And the bank would be on your back. And you're out on the street. Nobody's worrying, oh, well, you know, maybe. No. So everyone, if you rent a home or have a home, you have to respect.
Ask Peter, just before I go to Jackie there, ask Peter, should people ever be evicted from a home? Let's see if you get an answer out of him. Might never get an answer out of him for that question.
Hi, Pete. I was just wondering, do you think people should be evicted from their homes?
Well, there are exceptions to that. Like, you know, there are.
Jeez, you've changed your tune in the last few years. I couldn't get an answer to you 3 years ago when I asked you that question. You said no.
Probably 6 years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, things have changed. Okay, well,
I think this is very limited exceptions, but this is always what's put out there. It's always put out there. Like, the overwhelming majority are true reasons which go beyond the, you know, a so-called no-fault evictions, as people like to phrase them, where landlords are selling up because of high property prices or, you know, various other reasons and stuff. But the premise of this is about providing security for people. And that's the premise of it, security of a home. Like, even now, the council said they were going to step in Ireland Oil to say they would buy houses that were up for sale. And they've failed miserably at that. They've actually, they've missed their targets to beat the band. Like, there'd be more chance of hitting the, I don't know, you know, whatever, you know.
Okay. I was looking for the analogy there as well. Well, okay, stay there, and Stephen will be with you in a second. Thank you, Bernie. Let me just go to Jackie as well. Jackie, hi, how are you?
Happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter. Happy Easter, yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I didn't say the other one.
No, no, it's okay. Our Taoiseach forgot to wish us a happy Easter yesterday too. We've lost our way in this country. We really have. I know the two things happened to fall on the same day, but one of them could have moved it or something. I don't. But you can't really move Easter, can you? You know what I mean? Anyway, getting back to housing. Do you believe there should be an eviction ban or a freeze on rents for the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, there definitely has to be some form of way of evicting people who will not play and are serial renters that do this, that go from house to house. And how they get away with it is amazing. Like, because I know a neighbour of mine had that experience going back a year ago when they tried to, where someone stopped paying rent and it was their grandparents' house. And they had these people in who could well afford it, and they stopped paying it. And it took them a year and 4 months to get them out of the house.
Wow.
And in all that time, they didn't pay rent and they didn't look after the property. So they ended up having to go back in and sorting out the house after they did get them. So, you know, and there's people who are doing this full time that know what they can get away with. But just on another note then, like if you look at TDs and senators at the minute, or your politicians, like there's 80 politicians that are renting property. So 1 in 5 TDs. So can you see much happening to help the renters? I don't see it happening because there's too much.
Yeah, because they've skin in the game. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's another thing that's coming down the line is this whole thing with the Ukrainians and, you know, when they have 90 days to get into the provision center, these so-called whatever, however they're going to pop up somewhere, and then they're out the gap. Now, they will be on looking for rental accommodation. Like every other one. So it's going to heat up the whole...
Absolutely.
That whole...
Yeah, so you have another 500 people a week, because that's roughly how many people are coming in. Another 500 people a week who are now going to be out of accommodation after 90 days. And they're going to be on the market as well, looking for somewhere to stay.
So who will you rent to? Will you rent to a Ukrainian family sooner than to an Irish family?
I don't think people pick a preference, as long as they get the rent.
Well, I have a feeling. I think it's going to be far more beneficial for people to kind of go down the route of the Ukrainians.
Why? Guaranteed the money. Because the state's paying.
They're guaranteed 100%.
But there's a lot of landlords out there who refuse HAP. They shouldn't, by the way. There's a €14,000 fine for refusing HAP.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of landlords won't take HAP. They come up with another reason. They just say it's gone or something. But they won't take HAP. I know landlords that don't take HAP.
Yeah, because they're afraid of who they're getting in.
Well, that's it. And landlords will tell you that straight up. True. And I'm sorry, Peter, I know you don't like the idea of that, but there's anecdotal evidence out there that people who are on HAP don't treat the homes as well as people who are privately paying.
Well, a lot of people, Loyal, I suppose you're fully aware, there's a lot of people who are so-called working poor who are working who are on HAP. So many people I know that are on.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying.
Working, like half
the evidence is clear, Peter, from landlords will tell you that they have had bad experiences. That doesn't mean everybody on HAP is a bad person or is going to treat property badly.
I accept that.
And it's that old thing, you know, what you're getting for nothing you don't appreciate. You know that kind of thing.
No, it's not. You don't get anything for nothing. The way it works is that they pay a percentage back to the council. And on top of that, most people are topping up on top of what they're getting on HAP to cover the rents. And the point, I don't know your previous caller, John, was it? The man that was speaking there?
Jackie.
Yeah. Hi, Jackie. Happy Easter to you as well.
Happy Easter.
You made 100% point about the accommodation crisis with Ukrainians, because that's going to keep the accommodation costs high. And who does that benefit? Like, accommodation rents are going to go through the roof as well, because they're going to be forced into an already under pressure an overstretched rental market, and we have this happening as well. So, like, you know, we have these huge, huge issues happening in Ireland now. And I think it needs to go back to basics. We need to go back.
I mean, this idea that the government have now changed the rules for Ukrainians is a load of shite, to be honest with you, because all they've done is move the problem from the Department of Integration to the Department of Housing. So they've just moved the problem to a different department. That's all.
It's the Noel. Okay. We have to call it the Department of Disintegration. Well, just call it properly. Yeah. Department of Disintegration has become.
The Department of Housing is the Department of Homelessness. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what they are. Because, like, you know, in essence, like, you look at the homeless, the housing figures, their targets. They've missed every target to beat the band.
Hold on. No matter what target, you know, any politician tells you at the front door over the next 6 months, oh, we're going to build 500 houses a year. We're going to build 1 million houses a year, the Labour Party said at one stage, right? 1 million houses. You can say, you might as well say 10 million. You can't build houses, because the problem is not the building of the houses. It's not the money. It's actually people to physically build the houses.
But they should
That's
be
the
honest.
Problem.
They're not honest. The problem with those politicians and that political class is that they're not honest.
No, because I mean, there's a limit to how many houses you can build.
First of all, they would take on the market, first instance. But the first thing they would do is say, we'll stop the sell-off of council housing. What party politician has come out and said, we'll stop the sell-off of council housing?
Yeah, and the other thing, by the way, Simon Harris saying he's going to spend 45 grand encouraging expats to come home, builders and, you know, people in construction. So what's the point of them coming home? Where are they going to live? You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know what? Simple Simon should go off to Brussels and go off with Phil Hogan for a few weeks or something, you know, because you know what? They've no interest in the people of Ireland. None of them. None of them have any interest in the people of Ireland who have even the legitimate concerns about so many issues, immigration, the health disaster we're facing, the homelessness crisis we're facing. Like, what country are we living in? Are we living in just, a country that's beholden to the big corporate interests, or are we putting a country that's putting the people first?
Stay there for a second. Hang on, both of you. Let me just go to Stephen as well. Stephen, hi. How are you?
How are you?
How are you keeping, Stephen? Okay, Stephen, I mean, should we have a freeze? I mean, this started off with a conversation because Scotland end the rent freeze today, although there have been calls to extend it for 5 years. Now, we have rent caps on pressure zones of up to 2%, you know, based on inflation. Mm. So should we have a rent freeze for 3 or 4 years, or have and extend these kind of eviction bans? Does that make any difference, or does it make things worse?
Well, for starters, rent pressure zones and caps and things like that have not worked in all the years that they've been in place. There's been ways around them, and councils vote to, you know, go to the upper thresholds every time. So it can have up to, say, 2%. But if you do that 2% every year, you know, that's 8% now in the last 4 years, which is, you know, above market inflation. Mm-hmm. You know, so all of these things don't work. The second question I'd put back to most people is, what's going to be more expensive? Building, you know, a lot of housing, modular housing, or whatever it is, on brownfield and greenfield sites and fast-tracking it through the planning process, or continuing to spend tens of thousands of euros housing the 14,000 Irish people that we know of in hotels and other situations like that, plus all the money for HAP, plus everything else that's going into it, plus all the money that we have to spend for the immigration, for all the people that are coming into international protection, and all of the Ukrainians coming in. I know which one is the cheaper of the options and the better long-term outcome, you know. So yeah, in answer to your question, at least, absolutely, we should have a permanent rent freeze for the next 5 years.
Permanent rent freeze.
But
here's the problem, okay? And this is what the economists will say. If you have a rent freeze or a limited increase of 2%, for example, as we have at the moment in pressure zones, so developers or, you know, vulture funds, as Peter calls them as well, come into the country, they build new houses, they build apartments, they purposely inflate their rents then because they know they can't put it up again for 5 years or 3 years or whatever it is. So then you get the market that we currently have now, which is inflated prices, because you've got landlords purposely doing that. Whereas if you give the landlords the freedom to increase the rent whenever they want, they're more likely to leave tenants in there who are good tenants, because they know if they have to put them out, they can increase the rent at any time. Do you understand what I'm saying? So there's pros and there's cons.
But they're doing that anyway. You know, they're waiting until the next opportunity to up the rents in a pressure zone to force their tenant out, you know.
But there's a lot of landlords happy to take a few hundred quid less if they've got good tenants. You know what I mean? Because,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can throw all the anecdotal evidence around that you want about people that demolish their homes and, you know, wreck the places and you know, don't bother paying rent and things like that, you know, but...
Well, it's not anecdotal, Stephen. It is happening. It is happening quite a lot.
But you just called it anecdotal. There's, you know, point me to a report that says it, you know. I think there's no opportunity to rent at an effective, affordable level for anybody within, you know, three counties width of Dublin or any major city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I know. No, I understand the point. Sorry about that. I understand the point you're making. Hey, Peter, listen to what Stephen's saying. He's saying, yeah, 5 years, rent freeze.
Yeah, well, I think it's in the round. I think he's making a lot of valid points, Steve. But I think in terms of it, it's in the round how we look at it. Like, you know, we can't look at one measure in isolation and think it's going to solve it. But it has to be done, you know, in a serious issues in terms of, as I mentioned, outlining the solutions we're talking about. There's issues with Airbnbs, mm-hmm. the vacant homes and all these other issues as well. Mm-hmm.
There's loads of other issues that are, you know, coming into this, are playing into this problem, okay?
But
unregulated immigration policy is a huge problem, right? And no, Steve might not agree with me on this one. But I mean, and I absolutely, by the way, believe we should support people coming from countries where there's war, where their lives are in danger. And we should also be supporting some level of Ukrainian people. I believe, by the way, that those numbers should have been capped. I think many politicians agreed at the time they should have been capped because we're not a big country. We have a limited accommodation. We are already in a housing crisis. So we could easily turn around and say, listen, we're capping those numbers at 40,000. And in 6 months, once we look after those people, maybe we can take another 20. Maybe we can take another 20 in a year. Maybe in other words, we should have looked at that as we went along instead of just this free-for-all situation, right? Because that's now contributed to the housing crisis. It's contributed to the inflating prices, and it's contributed to the lack of housing that's available on Dafter, my home, or whatever it is.
Absolutely. Well said, Niall. But I think on top of that, it's caused huge division. Like, if you can consider, right, there seems to be no money and no object in spending money directly through the state to provide accommodation through accommodation centres. But yet, when it comes to providing homes for people who are already homeless, it goes off to the private sector, it goes off to approved housing bodies, it goes off to different means rather than direct state funding. So the means are there to do it, but the will isn't there to do it. And that's what's creating huge division.
I would agree, Stephen. Just coming back to that point, in relation to immigration, it has an effect on housing, it has an effect on hospital waiting lists, it has an effect on GP services, education. Once you start to increase the population of a country, and by the way, I believe Ireland could sustain a population of 10 million people, provided we did it properly, did it slowly, and we built the infrastructure around that. But as it is at the moment, we should have capped the numbers. We should be looking after people, for example, who come from war, but those who are coming as economic migrants should be put back on a plane and sent back to where they came from, to a safe country or whatever it happens to be. We can't accommodate the world, Stephen, and that's creating a huge housing problem.
Well, you're going to be slightly surprised, possibly, to hear me agree with you. We can't accommodate the world. We could accommodate 10 million people. We could easily accommodate 10 million people, you know, while also building, you know, all of the infrastructure and services that are required for it.
Takes time.
Who said that, you know, the influx of Ukrainians and asylum seekers into Rathcrea said point blank that this is going to have no effect on the dentist services in Rathcrea at all, because there's no one there to take to take medical cards and things like that for the dentist services. And, you know, anybody else that can afford it can buy it privately. We should be saying that anyone who comes into the country as an asylum seeker, fleeing war, persecution, whatever, you know, here you go, we'll put you up for 6 months, a year, help you get a house, do everything that we're supposed to be doing under all of our international obligations, and then we wouldn't have a problem. Because now we have a problem. We have put people into warehouses and fucking tents on a hill somewhere and doing all kinds of things and saying, there you go, we'll leave you to it, you sort yourself out.
Mm.
And now all of a sudden everyone is going, well, hang on a second, I now feel like I can't get a doctor's appointment even though I haven't
it's a class issue, because when you have a diverse society, which Ireland is becoming a very diverse society, and you have a visa system, or you have student visas or whatever it is, or work visas, people come in with a particular skill, the same as they would in most countries under a visa system. Then you have international protection applicants, right? The problem is, when you have a lot of international protection applicants, many of them are unskilled workers. I'm not having a go with them, by the way. They're just unskilled workers. We've had a lot of our own unskilled workers.
Yeah, but you can
still
hand them a sweeping brush and tell them to go and sweep the
street. Absolutely. Or you can work in hotels or shops or whatever it is, or garages or all that. Okay, and that's really vital too for our economy. But in saying that, they will never, ever be able to own their own home. They will never be able to sustain themselves in a country that has a massive cost of living crisis, right? So in other words, they will always be, and I don't mean to say this in a disparaging manner, it might come across that way, a drain on the system. So what you have to balance, there's no harm in having some people coming into the country that would be a drain on the system, because we have our own drains on the system in this country, right? But we will always have that situation. But you have to balance that out, you know, with people who are qualified, who will be able to provide their own home, who'll be able to buy their own car, who'll be able to support their own family. Do you understand what I'm saying? So,
but, on top of all the indigenous people that are already here and born here,
absolutely,
will never be able to afford it and should be given the opportunities to be able to afford it. Somebody mentioned the proclamation, and it's just like, these are the ideals that we should have been striving to for the last 100 years.
But there's no planning.
There's no joined up thinking in the government. You're right. And every 5 years, something changes. And it's just like, well, we'll keep going with what we were doing and we'll get to that eventually.
Hang on, both of you, because Martin's been waiting ages there. I do apologise, Martin. Martin, hi, how are you?
I'm very well, Niall. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Just to let you know, you're not the only one working today.
That's all right.
But,
happy Easter, by the way.
Happy Easter. On the idea of rent caps, no, I wouldn't be in favour of it. Now, I'm not a landlord. Let me put that out there first off. But I'm staunchly in favour of a free market. Okay? But the way I view it is, if I have a commodity or a service or an item that I want to put on the market, I would put it out there. And if a person wants to pay for it and they can afford it, they will take it. Behind all of that, the real issue here is that we live in a country, and when I walked abroad, I was walking all over Europe when I was in my 20s, and actually when I was in my late teens into my 20s. But I had a conversation with a professor, a Dutchman. He was an economics expert. And we were talking, and he at one point said to me that if the Dutch had Ireland, if the Dutch lived in Ireland, they'd be a world superpower. And if the Irish lived in Holland, we'd all drown. I do believe that. I think he's right. This country, if we had the Kimberley diamond mines, if we had the biggest oil reserves, if we had the biggest gas reserves, if we had every asset in the world, I think we would be in the same situation. Because Irish people, unfortunately, in my opinion, when they go to the polls, they elect the representatives on the basis of personality and partisan past. They generally, Irish people don't really look at the actual policies that people represent and the history of what has this individual done. Now, obviously, you know, you get some people that are going, they're running for election for the first time. But if they don't carry out and do what they say they were going to do, kick them out. I mean, I can't think of any. I've watched elections all around the world, and I can't think of any other country where when someone is elected, you'll see them being lifted into the air, people clapping them on the back. It baffles me. You know, politics is such a serious business. I just don't understand.
And it's complicated in this country. And by the way, I have a feeling that there's rumblings going around at the moment that at the last minute, some Fianna Fáil politicians will not be voting for Simon Harris, and also many independents are not going to vote for him, and there could be a general election called before the end of the week. Now, I'm not saying it will, that's a possibility. So, and by the way, to some degree, I would agree, although I think it's going to be confusing for the electorate, because you're going to have the local elections, the referendum, and the EU elections, and now you're going to have a general election all at the same time. I think that'd be grossly confusing for the citizens of the country. So I think they should move it to a date after the local elections, or even before it, whichever. I don't think you can do it before it, actually. It would have to be after it. So I think that would be very confusing. But I think it would be better to have the election sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I get totally lost when I see the way people in Ireland. I mean, it seems to me there are so many people now.
Well, I think we're changing, Martin. I don't want to go into this too deep because I don't want to use you on time, but I think it's changing. I think people are awake at the moment. We saw that in the referendum. I think people are being critical. They're critically thinking. We're seeing a lot of things turning around. You can call it a shift to the right, or you can call it a shift to whatever you want. But I think everybody accepts. Peter, I'll ask you that question, Peter. Do you see a shift in the political mood at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. People are waking up and people are rising, as we use the anecdote from the Easter Rising. I think people have had enough and they've seen through. They felt for years, I think, powerless and disengaged and felt like, you know, they're all the same, which they are all the same. And they've shown the particular establishment have shown their true colours in Ireland. They are all the same.
Oh, bar
one
all
or two
same.
Maybe exceptions. Yeah. Bar one or two exceptions, as you mentioned. But they're totally far removed from the lived experience of most people. They don't live in the real world in terms of the struggles most people are facing in terms of to have a home, to have a dignified existence, you know, provide food on the table, heating, all the basic issues that we should have. And then at the same time, they're bringing in more draconian laws, like I saw that through the hate speech legislation, all the other stuff, and restricting people's rights. But the referendum showed there's a resounding rejection of them. And I'm glad people have actually, they should pursue this in a proper, I think, to be honest with you, it should be pursued in a way that would bring power back to people's lives. And I'd be very much an advocate of bringing people into the democratic system.
Sorry, Stephen, just in relation to what Martin, said, do you think people are, there's a bit of a shift at the moment, Stephen, and people are kind of waking up to what politics is actually all about realistically? Do you think there's a little bit of a shift?
I think there's a decent sized shift in people's awareness and understanding. Your previous callers are right. You know, the majority of people never really did due diligence on who they were going to vote for because, you know, well, my parents voted for this person, or this is the only person that I've ever met that I know of, and so I'll vote for them instead. Like the last 2, 3, 4 elections, I haven't met a single political candidate in my constituency bar one. And before that, I only met the other one because I deliberately requested a meeting with them. So how am I supposed to know unless I go and look at manifestos and look at political parties and talk to these people? Who should I vote for?
And also, if there was a general election tomorrow, Stephen, who would you vote for? I'm just curious.
Well, I was going to say that I'm absolutely not going to vote for a party that has been sitting on 400 million euros of gold bullion and not letting anyone know about it, you know? So that's one party that I won't be voting for off the top of my head.
Yeah,
I personally would be voting for the two political parties that I know of and I have followed for the majority of, you know, the last election cycle and so on, are Labour, Social Democrats, maybe one or two of the independents in my area.
Shivers down my spine.
The majority of people will never get a vote from me.
Well, no, I know you're... Stephen, that's fine. I expected you to say that.
I
expect you to say this.
I'm glad I didn't disappoint.
Yeah, you're okay. You didn't disappoint me.
Nobody comes to my area to canvass. Nobody comes to my area. Which is hilarious.
But do you not think the Sock Dems and the rest of them, do you not think they're pretty much just all the same, Stephen?
Hmm?
They're all saying more or less the same thing. You know what I mean? All the political parties.
In general, people
with the exception, you've got new parties there now, like AIM2. You've got new parties like AIM2, Independent Ireland. Now, maybe AIM2 is not everybody's cup of tea because you might be pro-choice. That's fine too. But you don't have to agree with every policy they have, by the way. You know, once they kind of sit more or less in a line with your feelings on life, you know, they're fine. Like, for example, with AIM2, I don't agree with all their policies, but I agree with a lot of what they say. The same with Independent Ireland. I agree with a lot of what they say. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, I don't agree with very much they say. Sock Dems, I don't agree with anything they say. So what I'm saying is, at least, you know, people should be able to find a party that aligns with them. But we've had a problem with that for years in Ireland. Only recently we've had the two extra parties, the two or three extra parties. I mean, you look at America, for example. You mightn't like the system, but you've got the Democrats and the Republicans. So you've got the Liberals and the Conservatives. You can pick a side. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You can't really pick a side over here.
Well, we're spoiled for choice, really, now at the moment.
Are we really?
That's not including the independence and things like that. But it may be
Gary Gannon was asked the other day what a woman was. But speaking of the Sock Dems, Gary Gannon was asked what a woman was, and he struggled to answer the question.
You can divide and try and gotcha people with questions like that, but
I know what a woman is too. There's no gotcha with a question like that.
Are you talking literally, biologically, physiologically, sociologically,
just,
or going by what is
no,
what
the just answer says. If somebody just said to you tomorrow off the cuff, Stephen, what's the definition of a woman? What is a woman? What is a woman?
What is a man?
It's an easy question to answer.
I've already answered it to you several times in previous conversations, but what
Stephen, I'm going to send you out a Niall Boylan podcast mug, right? Just for yourself, all right? Okay? And I have it here, and it says the Niall Boylan podcast on the front, and I'm looking at people who are watching on video at the moment, and on the back it says woman. Woman. Noun. Adult, human,
adult,
female.
Human, female. Yeah.
Simple. That's all you have to say. That's all somebody has to say. That answers. That covers everything.
And was a man then? An adult human male? But what does it mean to be a man in society?
He has a knob.
How do you define a man? Is a man somebody who can produce sperm?
Yes.
Are they less of a man or are they not a man?
No. A person born with the capability of producing sperm, just like a woman is a person born with the capability of having a baby. But unfortunately, not every woman can have a baby. I understand that.
And not every man can produce sperm.
No. I understand that too. But that's an anomaly. That's a human dysfunction. That's an anomaly.
It's 2% of the global population.
Yeah, I know, but it's a dysfunction in human nature. That's just the way it is. But everybody is born with that capability, but unfortunately that happens sometimes. But yes, a man is born with a penis. A woman is born with a vagina and a womb. Simple as.
Grant.
Tony, hi. Hang on, we get into a round now, Stephen. Stephen, you're getting a mug, by the way. You just got a mug out of that. See what I mean?
Thank you very much.
Tony, hi, how are you?
Hello, Noel. How are you? Good afternoon. And a special happy Easter.
Happy Easter, Tony. Okay, Tony. Getting back to the actual question. The actual question was: should we have rent freeze and eviction bans?
No.
No. Okay. Why not?
Oh, that's a short answer, right? Because in my estimation and opinion, it's the government have destroyed the rental market in this country on the private part, small landlords.
Yeah.
I can look at my own road where, say, up to 7-8 years ago, there was 8 rented houses. Now there's none. Why? Because all the landlords have sold up, and it's because they were run out of the market through over-regulation, high taxation. And it's okay for Peter Dewey to come on. I know the man is headed in the right place.
It is, yeah. Very
but he's way off. He's way off.
Do you think so?
He's way off. Like, there's no investors anymore. There's no one. It's only the big vulture funds that are coming into this country and buying whole apartment blocks, whole housing estates. It's only them. There's no small investors anymore. There's no one in the construction industry. But like, there's no tradesmen anymore. And they're buying houses. And that's their pension. Why? Because of the fear of the house not being there anymore.
Sorry, Peter. What are you trying to say to Sony?
No, I appreciate that. Like, I appreciate it, but I don't think it's way off. I think what it is, like, you have to look up. As I said at the outset, Noel, as well, I said it's in the round. You look at all these issues. Like, you don't look at one or two things in isolation. And one of your previous
look at the investments. Like, there's no one buying to that anymore. I worked on housing estates where maybe 10 to 15% of the houses was being bought by people, small landlords, who are being let out. Now, what I'm saying to you is, in the last few years, on my road alone, which is only a small road in Dublin, I think it's there's 2 houses left they're going up for sale. So that was 10 houses in the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Because of the people after being poured out. And I've spoke to some of the landlords. I think I spoke to 4 of them and asked them, why are they selling up? And the answer was over-regulation by the government. It says it's just too much hassle.
That's the point of it.
Now, the landlord was trundling along. Well, everything was going fine. It wasn't perfect. But you turned the clock back 10 years ago, 12 years ago even. And
the bed sets.
Yeah, but just like the rental market. Yeah, but just
the bed sets was long before that, Peter.
I know, but still,
and the government decided, and the RTB is just not fit for purpose. It's not fit for purpose because the landlords have no protection, and you can't blame a landlord. If you can honestly say that a landlord is wrong to sell up and get out of the market, well, then you know nothing about business or economics. Because there's nothing in that for landlords.
Go ahead, Peter. I look at a couple of things. With respect, home ownership is that one of the lowest levels ever in Ireland, right? Home owners. So for young people and families, the opportunity to buy a home is impossible. Vulture funds.
Yeah, but we're talking about rental here.
Hang on, let him finish. Let him finish, Tony.
The international capital has moved into Ireland everywhere. You look at areas even where I live in Rathmines and stuff where people can't afford to live. There's co-living spaces everywhere, and it's $18.50 for a car parking space for people. They've been forced into misery because of the policies. And I agree with you on the point of the landlords in terms of that. There should be a fair system. Hang on. There should be a fair system of taxation, for instance, for landlords across the spectrum with vulture funds. Some vulture funds pay next to no tax. Other landlords pay maybe 50% tax. Right? That's an issue. But the regulation isn't. The regulation, I would argue, I agree with you on the Residential Tenancies Board. So we agree a lot of stuff because it's not fit for purpose. We need an independent rental board.
But what I don't know really why anyone would want to be a landlord in this country. It has negative tax implications, expensive fees, complicated rental rules. You know, it requires expert advice. It's stressful. I mean, why would you even want to be a landlord in this country?
No, they don't want to be landlords anymore.
Well, you can get them. I don't.
Well, sky high rents, that's how they get them. Because rents have never been so good.
I'm sure Peter would agree with me in saying small landlords have been driven out of the market. And it's left a huge... And it started off with the bedsits, Peter. Like, people was living in bedsits. And I knew a couple of lads that was living in bedsits.
Most people did when I was young. Yeah.
They were fine.
Yeah, eating beans and pizzas. Yeah.
And then the government decided to come in and say, we're doing away with bed. With no backup plan. There was no backup plan for them people. They were just turfed out of their bedsits. The landlords then had to spend fortunes putting bathrooms in. And that was the start of the rental rise. If you look at when the rise...
I would agree with you, Tony, to some degree, but the real problem started in around 2010. That's when the real problem started. And we already had a problem, but we didn't have enough houses for families. Whatever about, yes, the students looking for their bedsits, and we should bring back bedsits, by the way. I don't see anything wrong with them, unless they're unsafe, of course. Mind you, they were unsafe in our day, too, when everybody used to live in rat mines. They were very unsafe then. But nobody cared. I remember a fella who fell through the floor one day in one of the bedsits. It was one of the houses out in rat mines. The floor actually collapsed again. Up on the ground floor. He was on the second floor, but he ended up on the ground floor.
See, so, if it happened today, no, the landlord would probably double charge him, like, you know.
A free lift. But Faye, then let me just bring Don and Breed in before we finish today here as well. Don, hi.
Landlord.
Yeah, this is true, Tony. Don, hi, how are you?
Yeah, good. Just to continue on what Tony was saying there, from 2011 on, from around 2011, we had about 1,400 homeless people in the country. We now have
14,000.
We're around 14,000. And since then, we had the bank bailouts. We had the ban on bed sits. We have restrictions in the planning permission. We've got rent controls, rent freezes. We had a lockdown where people were told not to work for 2 years, construction stopped for a year. All these controls on the economy and the market compound and make it very difficult for us to work in the economy and buy houses. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is deregulate the market to increase the supply of houses and opportunities to rent. And that in turn decreases prices.
Okay, when you say deregulate the market, just explain that very briefly to me, what you mean by that.
reduce regulations as much as possible. So allow, for example, remove the restrictions on bed sits, remove the price controls, remove, completely eliminate the idea of there's going to be an eviction ban. Get rid of the 2005 Local Planning Authority Act, which prevents people from Dublin from buying property in places like Wicklow and Westmeath, because we're not able to buy property then build a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I agree with some of what you said, Don, but the problem is with the bed sits. Let's go back to the bed sits, because Tony mentioned them as well. And I'm kind of jesting in a little bit when I say we all lived in, you know, shitty bed sits when we were younger as well, and it didn't do us any harm. But the problem is, a lot of those bed sits were debt traps. And to be fair, they probably were, some of them. So there has to be some regulation around, you know, what, like if you're paying, you know, 900 quid a week as a student to live somewhere, there has to be a level of regulation where you're entitled to have a jacks.
Yeah.
You know, you're entitled to have a room that's not going to go on fire, or you're not going to get carbon monoxide poisoning. So there has to be some regulation.
Yeah, there has to be some level of health and safety regulation. You can't sell someone a house that's on fire, for example. You know, like I don't think it's too complicated. Like, to have health and safety regulations, you can regulate things from the perspective of, does this harm other people physically?
Niall, how can you make it more unregulated? Ireland is the wild west of housing. We nearly have Jesse James, one of the outlaws, coming here. Because they're making so much money.
Well, which we're also putting migrants into that place in Coolock, the Crown Factory. So that has asbestos roof.
There's no enforcement of the regulations. You can have regulations to beat the ban.
There was an eviction ban for 2 years.
If you don't have
enforcement, there was an eviction ban. That was enforced.
You can don't have an enforcement of regulations. It's pointless. So, you know, look at the Airbnbs, for instance. You know, you go on Airbnb, go on Daft there and have a look at Airbnb. And you'll see every
we need Airbnbs.
Far more Airbnbs, unregulated. And
we need Airbnb.
Sorry, Don, we need Airbnb.
We need them. We need them to exist.
Here's my point. They brought regulations in, and there's about 24 counties in Ireland that haven't done it yet. 24 counties haven't pursued anybody for letting Airbnbs over 90 days. So there you go. You have rent sky high up and down the country now.
Would you not agree, Don, that the Airbnb, the regulations that were brought in weren't bad regulations, but they're being completely abused? That people are using...
We don't need to regulate Airbnb. When I go to another county to look at property, I need a low-cost rent, so something I can rent for one night. Like, I go to Belfast, I go to Cork, I go to Galway, I can find something within 50 euro. If you get rid of Airbnb, then I have to spend 150 euro
in a hotel. My point is about entire homes and apartments. I have no problem with somebody renting a couch on, you know, going to go and stay in somebody's room in their house. That's not an issue. The issue is with the entire homes and apartments, where you have a housing disaster and it's no enforcement. My point is there's no enforcement of these regulations. And you're talking for more of a Wild West, as I said.
You're not listening to the conversation. You're living in a fantasy world where there's no regulation being forced. We had a lockdown. We had the eviction ban. We have price controls. We have rental freezes. We have piles of regulations. Everybody is telling you that we're over regulated. You have to listen to what people are telling you. That's not made up.
Hold on. You made a point there to say homelessness has increased since 2011. We 4,170 children in homeless accommodation. And then you're saying you want more deregulation? You want more homelessness?
You're just not listening to the conversation. That's not what we said. Myself and Tony said the same thing. If you regulate the market, we have less houses. Therefore, you have more homelessness. That is the shortest way we can explain it. We can show you charts. We've explained it to you.
I think you may be misunderstanding it. I do understand the point Don is making. When you regulate, and I said this at the very start of the show today, when you bring in a regulation, and I mentioned, for example, with rent freezes, well, then you've got landlords purposely charging more money because they know they can't increase it again. So sometimes regulation can have the opposite effect of the effect it's meant to have.
My point is about the enforcement of those regulations. Like, what Don made a point to say...
Because you're ignoring what everyone else is saying. That's why you keep changing the conversation.
Have, It's failed already. The lack of regulations, the lack of enforcement of those regulations.
But you're living a fantasy world, Peter.
That's a reality.
You're not living reality. I live on a sky high rent, so when evictions are happening. Yeah, you live on sky high rent and over regulation.
With respect.
I live in a garage, you moron.
Speak over you.
You live in a garage, son.
I live in a garage. I don't live in a normal home. I moved from a shed to a garage. Like, I know what I'm talking about. I've been going around the country looking at properties. We're overregulated. If I buy a property, I can't build on top of it because there's a pile of regulations. The Peter Dooleys of this world are telling us that there's no regulations. It's like, we're telling you.
I'm sorry, I want to find out exactly. So you're living in a garage at the side of someone's house?
Yeah, I live in a laneway with no address.
Oh, what? Like in the back of somebody's house, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. And have you got heating and a toilet and a shower?
Oh, it's warm. Oh, yeah, no, it's brand. You know, it's the cheapest thing I can find in Dublin.
And how much is it for the garage?
Oh, well, cheaper than anything I can find in Dublin. I'll put it like that.
Okay. All right, okay. Well, somewhere to live, I suppose. Okay. Well, Sandy, I just want to take one more call on this. Breida, hi. How are you doing?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
I'm grand. Sorry, I'm after keeping Peter Dooley nearly for an hour and a half now at this stage, but he's okay. I've only got 5 more minutes. He'll stay with us. Anyway, go ahead, Breida.
Well, I think the biggest problem is the vulture funds, to be honest with you, Niall. I think they're cutting everybody else out of being able to buy a home. I know the government brought in some stupid rule that they have to pay X amount of tax over a certain amount. I think they should be just not allowed buy in bulk at all. I think, you know, I live in a student town, and the amount of the problem with student accommodation now here is phenomenal, because landlords are getting out because they just can't cope with all these regulations and restrictions. And, you know, and it was always a student rental town. A lot of people bought a second home, and they'd only have maybe their own home and one home to rent. But even that they can't cope with now, and they're getting rid of them, you know.
And I understand the point you're making in relation to vulture funds or large developers coming in and buying, you know, huge amounts of properties and renting them out. But the problem is that when you start to restrict that, well, then you're not. We don't have a free market anymore, and then you're moving into a socialist society. So you can't really start doing things like that.
But you can if they're top. Like if they buy 30 houses, there's 30 families that couldn't buy.
I know. And that's difficult. You know, I know that's a bitter pill to swallow. By the way, that's not happening as much as you think it's happening, by the way. But it is happening.
Yeah, but it is still happening. And I mean, okay, I know Michael O'Leary bought a clunk of houses out in Swords for his staff. You know, that's, and he's going to charge them a low rent. Like, I have no problem with something like that. But when you have these guys coming in and buying up in bulk and charging phenomenal. I mean, I don't know how people pay rent and survive anymore now.
No, I don't.
I mean, I'm so thankful I have my home and my dad.
So most people don't earn the right, 2,200, whatever it is in Dublin to rent a 3-bed house. Most people don't earn 2,200 in Dublin.
I know, it's disgraceful. If you own a house that's over so many years old, you shouldn't be allowed to put a huge rental income on it, because like the house is probably more, if you have a house for 20 years, it's more or less paid for.
I seen an ad on TikTok. I was scrolling through TikTok last night, and some young one, she's an estate agent, was standing in the front garden. Look at this wonderful house. And she said, it's a good project. In other words, it's a fixer-upper, right? Okay. It's a good project. Yeah. It was in Clontarf. It looked like a normal, everyday, semi-detached house. How much do you think it was?
About 480,000.
How much do you think it was, Peter? Clontarf, semi-detached house.
680,000.
995,000. And it was a fixer-upper. Yeah. There was no heating, no radiators. It was that old. The house, when they went inside, it looked like it hadn't been touched since the day it was built. You know, the original old furniture, old fireplace. It was probably an elderly couple who passed away, maybe, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no central heating. Oh. 995,000.
And you know what, Niall? Somebody will buy it and they'll do the job on it.
Somebody will buy it.
I could never get my head around how people pay, you know, phenomenal money for a house when you could try and go down the country a bit further.
Absolutely.
And buy a plot and build your own beautiful house exactly as you want it.
I know some people like the city living and they want to live in the city, but to be honest with you, I've learned that lesson a long time ago. That's gone.
I wouldn't say a million plus.
You buy a mansion outside Dublin for 995,000.
But you build so some place for 900
and by the way, you need to spend at least 300,000 in this place, at least.
At least, and that's if you don't find.
And your woman was smiling while she was saying it.
Of course she was. She's looking at her commission. She's gone. Woo-hoo,
I said, at least Dick Turpin wore a mask. You know what I mean? Listen, I have to wrap it up. I'm sorry for keeping everybody today and wasting everybody's time. I do apologise on this bank holiday, Breda. Thank you very much indeed. Are you working today, Breda? Are you offline?
No, I'm only getting over keyhole surgery on my knee, Niall. So
that's right. Oh, get well soon, Breda. Get well soon.
My daddy had a great saying, you can't kill weeds.
Right.
So.
Okay, Peter, I hope you get well soon. I hope you're back in work, flying in the sky again. Peter, listen, thank you very much indeed for hanging on as long as you did. Very quickly, Peter, because obviously you want to give yourself a plug. You're running for election in Kimmage in the local elections on the 6th of June. Or 7th. 7th of June. Sorry, I do apologise. You can vote on the 6th if you want, on the 7th of June. And what do you want to say to people who want to vote for you?
Well, I'm in the Kimmage Rathmines area, so that covers Crumlin, Rathmines, Kimmage, Terenure, Harold's Cross, all that area as well, area I've grown up in and my family have come from, and I've loved the area and its history for years and stuff as well. But, you know, people know where I stand. I've stood for many years on campaigns in the local area, have a huge successful record. But I want to stand up to bring power back to people. We've had enough for me as a political establishment, the status quo. It doesn't represent the interests of people. Like with all the stuff that's going on that you've spoken about, Niall, and fair play to you, you've been one of the broadcasters in Ireland that's actually offered the platform for debates for people. And without you, there wouldn't be much opportunity to have these debates with people, whether you agree or disagree. I respect the work you've done. And I think it's important that people have more independent voices and people have debates and discussions. Not that everybody has all the right answers and solutions, but people should come together and work in the interests of people in our communities. I think that's the most important facet, and stand up for people that don't have a voice.
Yeah,
people who are unrepresented.
I think that's across the board now at the moment, across the whole spectrum. People feel voiceless.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that's why there's a huge change. And look, for those people living in those areas, you know, have a look at Peter's policy, see if you're happy with his manifesto, so to speak. But either way, he's a good man. And I'd say you could talk.
Thanks very much, Noel.
No, you are. I've known you for a long time, Peter. You've been coming to my show. And you're well able to take an argument and well able to take criticism as well. Peter.
I appreciate that. Thanks very much, Noel. And keep up the good work to yourself and your team as well. You have a great team there with you as well.
All right, Peter.
Producers, researchers behind you.
Thanks very much. Peter Dooley from the Dublin Renters Union, as you know, voting or running for election in the Kimmage area there. And on the 7th of June in the local elections. He's a good man. He genuinely is, and maybe give him your vote first or second or third preference, whatever it is you want to give him. Maybe first preference. I'm looking here, Mullingar, Petite Woods House, Mullingar, County Westmead. Look at that. It looks like something Michael Flatley'd live in. Massive, big, you know, greens, all cut well with lovely bushes and landscape. And it looks like it's about 40 bedrooms in it or something like that. What is it? Does it say how many bedrooms it is? Oh, it says 6, but it looks like 6 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, detached, probably, I'm guessing, 5,000 square foot, maybe 5,000 square foot. It's in Mullingar. It's a beautiful looking house. 900,000. And you get a 3-bedroom semi-detached or whatever it is, 4-bedroom semi-detached Clontarf that needs work. Hasn't even got heating in it. For 995,000. Why would you want to live there? Maybe some people would, I don't know. Margaret says, by the way, on WhatsApp or on Facebook, so to say, anyone in Cork or anywhere else who is charging 1,500 for a room rental are nothing short of immoral, greedy and so-sos. They're opportunists who are taking advantage of a situation. But Margaret, that's the free market. People take advantage of a situation. Look at the second-hand car market at the moment. You know, diesel and petrol cars, second-hand, are going back up in price again because you can't get them. And people want to buy them. That's the market. That's the way the market dictates. Tina says, why are nurses and guards, or nurses, guard and teachers always used as some sort of yardstick measure by? You'd swear they were the only ones hard done by. They're not, for feck's sake. Or the one who turned down a house by the sea because she gets seasick. Oh yeah, do you remember that? There was a woman last year turned down a house for the council, a sea view house, which probably cost a lot of money, because she said she gets seasick. Billy on WhatsApp said, incident landlords pay 52% in rental income. Vulture funds get away with only 12%. Kevin Morris says, homes should never be a commodity. James says, if you want a shortage of rental properties, go right ahead. EOG says, Niall, do all the vulture funds apartments bypass the rent cap with on-site gems and concierge. Antonio says the government should have no say in private property ownership or usage. Go back to the previous one about the gyms and the concierge. Yeah, I think the way they get around it is by charging you the extra for the gym and the concierge or having your dog or a car park space. Don says if there's any more controls put on housing or the economy, skilled workers are forced will be forced to leave. Liberty says no way should we have any caps. Free Speech Matter says this is not how you solve the supply and demand problem, but it's a good way to make it worse. Okay. Listen, thank you to everybody who got involved in today's show. We really, really appreciate it. Once again, can I remind you, our website is down at the moment. You can still listen live, by the way, with the link that we send you from the show each day. But unfortunately, we've had a technical issue over the weekend and the server is down for some reason. But we do have somebody working on it at the moment, and we hope to have it up by the end of the day today. So today's podcast, as usual, will be on Spotify, iTunes and Amazon. So don't go to the website for today's podcast, but you can go to any of those other places, iTunes, Amazon or Spotify. To all our subscribers, by the way, we will have the website back up again in the next 24 to 48 hours. So don't worry. You will be able to see all the back catalogue and all the videos if you have subscribed. Please subscribe. It is the end of the month, of course. We do have to pay our bills. There's three of us working on the show. We don't get paid. And we rely on your subscriptions because, say, for example, this outage on our website is going to cost us a lot of money to get it put back up again because we have to pay maintenance on it. So it does cost money. And we don't have it. We dip into our own pockets every single month. So please, if you can, donate. I was going to say by going to the website. Tomorrow, you can go to the website and donate. Okay, or if you go to the... If you actually, I'll tell you what, if you want to go onto the website at the moment, you can, by just going to Google and putting in Niall Boylan Podcast. It's just if you write it in the address bar at the top, for some reason it's not coming up. But if you go to Google and put in NiallBoylan.com, you can click on it from there and you can donate on the website from there. All right? Listen, thank you very much indeed to everybody who donates, who subscribes, who helps us out. We really, really appreciate your support. It's very important to us. Thank you for joining us today, and I'll be back again with you tomorrow at 12.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.